Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
Winter wheat planted in the fall. If you had a 21 cause of loss, even though it's on the 2022 crop year, USDA went on ahead. If your adjuster put a 2021 date as the cause of loss, it met the cascade that the computer went through and triggered your triggered a payment, an ERP1 payment, and you got something in the mail.
Dr. Bart Fisher, co-director of the Ag and Food Policy Center.
If you had SCO on that wheat, we got to wait till 22 to see if it paid or not. It kicked you out of the cascade. So just by having an SCO policy, even if it didn't trigger anything, you got kicked out, which is forcing you into ERP2. Or if you had a loss in 21, but your adjuster just wrote down, you know, what does it matter? They wrote down a number. You also had losses in 22, so they put the cause of loss date in 22, never even got anything in the mail.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
A report we did about a year ago from Congresswoman Letlow in Louisiana. She's a new member on the Ag Committee. She's now moving over to APROPES. But she requested we do a study looking at fertilizer costs.
Dr. Bart Fisher, co-director of Texas A&M's Ag and Food Policy Center.
And then Senator Bozeman followed with a request asking if we would just look across the board. And so for those of you who aren't familiar with our center, and some of you may actually be involved in the process, but we have 94 what we call representative farms in 30 states around the country. And our team is constantly on the road updating them. And in every location, we work with a panel of 4 to 6 growers who create a farm on paper that's representative of their area, and we bring it back, and we have these huge models on campus where we can simulate forecasts of financial performance on those farms. And all the same, too, is if Congress wants to change something, you know, if they want to change a reference price, we can simulate the impact that would have. You know, we did a report last year when there all this hullabaloo was going on about, you know, eliminating stepped-up basis. We did a big report looking at what that would do to farms and handed it off to Congress, showing the explosion that would occur in primarily in capital gains, but also in estate tax liability. So it's a very useful tool. We ran it on those farms on the ride, and we actually went back to the growers and said, hey, tell us exactly what y'all are doing and spending, not what fertilizer prices are in your area. What are you going to spend per acre? And across the board, those were the estimates. You know, in north of 130%, fuel and lube, you know, north of 80. This was a lot of this report. This report was done right after, you know, Russia announced their invasion of Ukraine. And so this captured that dynamic in fuel as well. And so, anyway, we passed that off to Congress. But I put it in the background, too, because I do think this is going to factor into where Congress is going on the farm safety net, because they are concerned that it's not reflective of cost.
Fisher, who spent years within the House Ag Committee, talks about the Inflation Reduction Act.
The Inflation Reduction Act of 2022, the so-called inflation. Another show of hands. Anybody in the room think that spending $1.7 trillion is going to reduce inflation? Any takers? I didn't think so. It's Washington has a way of coming up with creative names for legislation. But the so-called Inflation Reduction Act was really a compromise in response to the bipartisan budget act that the president had proposed. And it was a multi-trillion-dollar bill. And so Senator Manchin, Senator Sinema from Arizona more or less held that up. They ended up reaching a compromise this past fall called the Inflation Reduction Act, the IRA of 2022. Some of you don't see it in here. One of those provisions sandwiched in here is debt relief for socially disadvantaged growers. They had floated that earlier in the year. It got held up in the courts. Congress came back. They more or less used the money that was over here in this gray part and just repurposed it here so it doesn't show up again. But some of you may very well have already received notice in the mail that all of your FSA-held debt is being completely wiped out. And so that was a component of this. The more notable in terms of size was the one on conservation. And so it included almost $17 billion in plus up to conservation spending. You know, there's a lot of things where I'll poke at the administration, and admittedly I worked for Republicans for 8.5 years on the Hill. Now I'm in a nonpartisan, you know, bipartisan, all of the above sort of role. But one thing I will say about the current administration and Congress that was controlled by Democrats is that with all the focus on climate, the approach they took was to plus up the existing programs. And so it could have been a lot worse, right? You know, cap and trade and all these other things that had been considered a decade earlier. And so I may poke some fun, but I'll give them some credit there that they stuck with, you know, the programs that we know. The one problem with that, though, is instead of just increasing and leaving it at that, of course, we had to tie all sorts of new strings to it. And it's a one-time infusion.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
Particularly following COVID, where you saw the huge spread between farm gate prices and retail prices, there was a lot of angst around the country about calf, particularly about fed cattle pricing.
Dr. Bart Fisher is co-director of the Ag and Food Policy Center at Texas A&M.
Who was really making money in that during that time frame? And so there was a lot of interest on Capitol Hill, particularly in regulating fed cattle pricing, imposing mandatory minimums on the amount, the volume of cattle that would have to be negotiated instead of formula price or traded on a grid. And so there was a lot of attention there. And for a while, a lot of folks thought that that might spill over into the farm bill. With where we are now, you know, amazing what can happen in a few months with where cattle prices are. We just sold a bunch of wean calves coming off wheat the little bitty tiny bit of wheat pasture we had sent to Oklahoma City earlier this week. You know, with prices where they are now, this debate has softened to some degree. It's not that it didn't that it went away, and some of you may still have very strong opinions about it. I just don't anticipate that it's going to spill over into the farm bill.
He previously served as chief economist of the House Ag Committee and explains what one line in legislation can do.
Back in 2018, you know, we really spent 2.5 years. Conaway came in as chairman in 2015. We really spent about 2.5 years trying to figure out what the heck to do on cotton, right? The 14 farm bill, the Cotton Council had proposed stacks as an alternative. We know what happened. China stockpiles 60-plus million bales of cotton. Price goes through the floor, right? We have to have an alternative. We spent about 2.5 years trying various approaches to get it done, and ultimately the one we landed on was to add seed cotton back to the farm bill. If you want to talk about how and why and all that, I'm happy to go through that in Q&A. But we talk about that a lot. But that same bill, it was a budget bill, the Bipartisan Budget Act of 2018. It passed in February of 2018. It included hurricane relief, but part of that was the original authorization for the WIP program. We're now in 6 years of ad hoc assistance, and it all started there. It's also where seed cotton came about. Why am I bringing it up here? Because one single line in that bill, which never really gets any attention, has to do with risk management for livestock. Historically, USDA could not spend, and this is by statute, USDA could not spend more than $20 million a year indemnifying livestock policies. It was just written, you know, hard-coded right into the U.S. code that they could not spend more than that. In that bill, again, Chairman Conaway was the one leading the charge at the time. Seed cotton was the big focus. It caught all the attention. There was a line in the bill that struck that provision, that limitation. Okay, I won't do to y'all what I do to the 186 students who sit in front of me for a class, but this is the one audience participation because I'm curious. 2018, RMA insured about $500 million in liability on livestock. What do you think it hit last year with that provision struck? $500 million in 18, what is it now? Any takers? $2 billion up front? I got $2 billion up front. $21 billion, a 40-fold increase. So the notion of, well, I get nothing out of that farm, but I get nothing out of D.C. if I'm a livestock producer. If you're not getting anything, it's because you're not looking close enough. And I don't mean any offense. I mean it more as encouragement. If you're not engaged on this subject, on this topic, and it applies to you, I'd highly encourage you to look, because there's a lot of stuff coming down the pike. Not the least of which is a new policy being developed right down in Lubbock for wean calves. They're just like you have RP on your cotton or your corn or your sorghum or wheat or whatever. There's going to be a new RP policy on wean calves coming. And so liability and insurance in 5 years has increased by 40-fold, 4,000-plus percent over the last 5 years alone. And it all goes back from one line in that one bill back in 2018. And so just to make y'all aware of that.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
I think there's a number of factors affecting the markets, but you know, quite a bit of it is it's wintertime, and winter weather is having some impacts.
Dr. Darrell Peel, Oklahoma State University livestock economist.
Recently, of course, we've had some snow, some storms in some places. You know, a lot of fed cattle country, feedlot country is muddy. And so that's probably causing some problems. And I think at the feedlots, we're probably still seeing some after effects of the December storm, which changed the timing of some cattle coming out of the feedlots. Some of the winter weather may even be impacting a little bit the movement of cattle out of feedlots to the packing plants. And so there's just been a lot of sluggishness there. Feeder cattle market's kind of the same thing. Winter weather has, sort of changed the movement of cattle out of the country. And of course, we're getting a little moisture out of the deal. So that's good. But I think, the markets are just in general kind of struggling through some of the more or less typical kinds of winter things.
Agrees winter weather can have an impact.
Obviously, it impacts cattle in terms of grading and pricing when they get really muddy. It's always a challenge for the industry to have to send really muddy cattle into the packing plants and that sort of thing. So there's just a variety of impacts going on right now.
What's happening with the box beef market?
The last few days, box beef has been, I guess I'd still call it sluggish too. It's backed up a little bit. Yeah, and we sort of anticipated that there's a, kind of a post-holiday reality check when the credit card bills come in. And again, it's winter weather, so that impacts movement of people and, certainly restaurant demand. A lot of the box beef strength in the last few weeks has really rested on, it appears, on the restaurant side. I think there's probably some more consumer limitations in the retail grocery side. That market's a little bit flatter. Most of the strength that we have seen through the winter coming out of the end of last year was really in the middle meats, and it was in particular with the the ribs and the tenderloins, the kinds of things that feature so prominently on restaurant menus. So I think that's where that has been, and that may be struggling a little bit. Again, it could be a weather impact to some extent. Folks aren't moving around. They aren't getting out as much right now. On the other hand, Valentine's Day will be upon us here before too long. That usually prompts a little bit of steak demand, so.
But what is the true impact of drought?
Many farmers and ranchers across the West continue to battle drought conditions, according to the 4th American Farm Bureau Federation Drought Survey. AFBF economist Danny Munch says the survey helps assess the impact of drought on Western agriculture.
We do it to kind of further quantify some of the ground-level impact that farmers and ranchers are experiencing. We distributed the survey to members across 16 states between October 19th and December 13th. We got over 550 responses this time. There were three separate sections of the survey: crop-specific factors, livestock-specific factors, and general water access.
One of the big takeaways was 60% of respondents reported selling off a portion of their herd or flock, with total herd sizes expected to be down 33%.
The last survey that we took in 2022, 67% of respondents reported reducing their herd size in 2021, and 50% were further reducing their herd during 2022. In this survey, 62% of respondents were reducing their herd size in early 2022, and a much lower 17% reported they were further reducing their herd or flock. So this could signal a bottom of the liquidations that were occurring because of drought. It also could just mean that farmers didn't have any animals left to sell.
Munch says changes in drought conditions since the survey are regionally dependent.
In some areas, drought conditions have not improved, like in Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas. In other places like California, they have received quite a bit of rain, and that occurred outside of the scope of the survey. And those rains, in some cases, have caused flooding. So it depends where you are in the country, how much recovery there is left in cases of drought, or if the drought is still present.
Learn more on the Market Intel page at FB.org. Michael Clements, Washington.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
This is just a little bit of a sampling. You start on the left with Kevin McCarthy as the speaker.
Dr. Bart Fisher is co-director of the Agriculture Food Policy Center at Texas A&M. Before that, he spent years as the chief economist at the House Ag Committee.
Think what you will. You may even have strong opinions having watched one of the cable news networks. You may have strong, feelings about Kevin McCarthy. Having worked with him, briefed him, done lots of work with his staff over the years, one great thing is that he comes from Bakersfield, California, and he knows ag, and he's very supportive of ag, and he understands the importance of farm policy and farm bills. And so I think it's a great thing having someone who understands what you all do sitting number three in the line of succession in this country and at the top of the U.S. House of Representatives. I think that's a good thing for ag. You start to move down to the through the list, G.T. Thompson, you think, well, Pennsylvania, not a whole lot of cotton grown in Pennsylvania. But I will say, to Mr. Thompson's credit, he was vice chairman under Mr. Conaway. He's made it a point to more or less visit the entire country, every state in the country. And he spent a lot of time in Texas, too. And he's also very pro-ag, very supportive of ag. And he gets, I think he also gets the importance that what they do in the Farm Bill has to work for all of the United States. And so I think Mr. Thompson's going to do a great job in that role. Two other new posts then on the right. One, the third guy might look familiar, Mr. Arrington. I was I don't know if I'll say disappointed. I was sad when he left the committee at the time. I really liked Mr. Arrington. You know, his point was he wanted to try to get on Ways and Means because there's other stuff he could do for ag, you know, between trade and tax policy. And it looks like his strategy may be coming to fruition because he was just named chairman of the budget committee. If you want new money in a farm bill to improve the farm safety net, who do you got to be working with if you're the ag committee chairman? You got to be working with growers, and you got to be working with who in Congress? The budget committee chairman. Who's the new budget committee chairman? Jody Arrington from Lubbock. And so I think that's another a great sign for ag. Mr. Arrington spends a lot of time talking about the budget, but I think he probably does a better job than anyone in Washington, though, talking about it in the context of ag, right? He knows in successive farm bills how disciplined we've tried to be on farm policy. The 2014 farm bill actually cut spending. You can't really point to any other legislation in Congress that does that. I think he also has been very good talking about the fact that we spent all this unbudgeted aid in ad hoc. It's similar to what Mr. Combes did 20 years ago. You know, if we can get away from that, Congress can choose to get away from that, but it means making meaningful improvements to the farm safety net. And so I think Mr. Arrington is very well positioned. Another one you don't hear about much, the Rules Committee. Don't fall asleep on me yet. You know, the Rules Committee, though, incredibly important. When we wrote the 18 Farm Bill, it was Mr. Sessions who was chairman from Texas. What does the Rules Committee do? In a bill that's going to the floor, they decide every single amendment that's in order on that bill. And guess what? That can have a huge bearing on what happens on a farm bill when you get down to the House floor. So it was incredibly important that he was at the helm at the time. This time it's going to be Tom Cole. He's my home district congressman. He represents southwestern central and southwestern Oklahoma on a district that abuts Chairman Lucas's district. And so you're going to have a guy who also knows production agriculture at the helm of the Rules Committee. And so in terms of lineup at the top, I don't know that you could pick a better crew out of the 435 members that are up there. You've got four really good leaders sitting at the top of those committees. Now, how does it interact with that reality of a four-vote margin? We're about to find out.
Dr. Bart Fisher with the Ag and Food Policy Center. It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
I won't get into all the wonky budget details of it, but the vehicle it came in, that bill, went under a special rule where it could only be temporary. It's one-time funding. Farm bill funding continues in perpetuity. That's the red.
Dr. Bart Fisher is former chief economist at the House Ag Committee, now co-director of Texas A&M's Ag and Food Policy Center.
So they added this one-time infusion. I mention it to you mainly so you could be on the lookout. Don't be surprised if in the farm press you start hearing at some point about the conservation cliff. Holy cow, this farm bill, you know, that we're working on now. Look, in 2026, there's these catastrophic cuts to conservation spending. I know y'all want improvements to the safety net, but look, we got to stave off these huge, devastating cuts to conservation. Those are not devastating cuts to conservation. Like, that was done on purpose. It was a one-time infusion that's short-lived. So be on the lookout for that. It happened when we had the Great Recession in 08. The same thing happened with SNAP spending. There was a one-time plus-up. We get to the 2014 Farm Bill, and it was all about what are we going to do to spend more on SNAP to stave off the devastating cuts. They weren't devastating cuts. It was a one-time plus-up. The same thing's happening here, but just it won't surprise me if you start to hear those talking points over the next year or two, particularly if this Farm Bill drags out, that we've got to stave off these devastating cuts. And down here at the bottom, you know, this top you could think of as kind of the credit limit, USDA's credit card authorized about the credit limit. The bottom is what we actually expect them to spend. Think of that as the checking account that they're when they actually write the check. CBO estimates they're not going to be able to spend all of it. Why does that matter for Farm Bill? In part because the current leadership could decide one thing they can do here is take that amount and add it to the red. They don't have the same restrictions in the Farm Bill, so they could rejigger all of it, add it to the red. And I mean, on things like EQIP, we already have a 2-to-1 backlog. I mean, we've got two times as many applications as we can approve. And so that is one thing that could happen, but that's really a political question. The other thing that happened here is that conservation was also reauthorized. You think, well, we got a farm bill coming. To be able to capture that and add to it, they had to reauthorize it. It's just another wonky budget thing. But important for you to know because you're thinking, well, we've got pressure, we need to get a farm bill done. Well, Title II's already been reauthorized. And we'll see here in a little bit, it's not the only it's not the only one.
So how should we prepare for this Congress?
Thank goodness we have this last election behind us. What a mess. You know, when I joined the Hill back in 2011, it was following the Tea Party wave. We had something like 64 new Republicans in the House. This time, and I think overall the balance was, we had 242 then Republicans. You need 218 to get anything done. So what is that? Like a 20, it's dangerous me doing math on the fly, 24 vote margin, I think. You could lose 24 votes out of your conference, still get 218 votes. You know, half of 435 rounded up, 218. That's the magic number in the House. How many does Kevin McCarthy have to work with now? Right down there at the bottom, 222. He's got a grand old total of four vote margin. Holy cow. You saw it play out. If any of you watched the drama, maybe you're not political nerds like me staying up watching on C-SPAN, but it took forever just to get the speaker vote done, right? What does that portend for voting on everything else the rest of the year? We're about to find out. But it could be really interesting. But there's no question, this is one of the biggest bumps in the road they're going to face. You know, how are they going to navigate that? In the Senate, they ended up picking up a seat so the vice president doesn't have to break a tie anymore. But largely, it's still roughly 50-50 like it had been in the Senate. So sort of status quo in the Senate. The House is now staffing up under new leadership.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
2022 was almost the culmination of about five major things that were, kind of hit the cotton market and hit other markets as well.
Barry Worsham is president and CEO of Cotton Incorporated. Looking back at 22.
But it really affected cotton, and I'll maybe touch on a couple of those. These are not necessarily in order of importance, but it's, you know, all five of these are important. You can't talk about 2022 without talking about the impact of COVID. And the way COVID has hurt affected the cotton market is, you know, when the early stages of COVID, consumers were, you know, they were scared, they deferred buying, and a lot of stimulus money came in around the world. Consumers started buying again, but we just didn't have the supplies because of, you know, the manufacturing was kind of shut down because of COVID. Then you had the port issues and transportation and costs, labor costs, and that really contributed to almost like the surge. It's like cutting off the pipeline and then just opening full bore, and that contributed to inflation. Then you had the China-U.S., situation where there's a lot of tensions out there. There were tariffs in 2019. You know, costs started, brands and retailers started looking at shifting somewhere else. And then in 2022, you had the implementation of the Uyghur Forced Labor Prevention Act. And the bottom line to that is, if you're importing cotton goods from any organization or that has any ties to that Western China Uyghur situation, you have to prove that you don't. And that's very difficult to prove that you don't have something. And what that did was it forced brands and retailers into two choices. Either I shift to synthetics or I have to move my business out of China. And it was just a kind of a tough time to be trying to move when everybody else is trying to do the same thing. And then you compound it by, look, the Russian-Ukraine war, and that drove up energy prices. And we all know what that did to input costs. And it really affected corn and wheat more than it did cotton, in terms of the increase in price, and therefore cotton lost in relative terms. The value of cotton didn't grow as fast as these other crops, and that's going to put pressure on plantings in this upcoming year. And then, of course, we got the drought, and everybody, I'm sure, in your region is fully aware of that. I won't go over that again, except to say we had a record abandonment, at least a 30-year record abandonment of the crop in Texas. And then now we're looking in 2023 at the hangover from all of this, which is the potential of recession, or at least a slowdown in the economies globally because of the effect of inflation and higher interest rates. So typically when we have a slowdown in the economy on a global basis, that's hard for cotton demand to rise in the short term, because consumers can always defer purchases until a later time on some of the products that we're in. So it's a complicated picture. A lot of things hit us in a negative, but there's maybe some signs that things there's a light after maybe in the second half of this year, or perhaps even into 24, and we can get back kind of on track.
Moving forward, cotton has to find new uses and tell its story.
we're even looking at the possibility of how we can take cotton products and then instead of and they end up in a landfill, maybe they could be recycled in terms of conversion to sugars and then repurposed into some other area. So there's a lot of little things that are very important, and you know, you have to have a story to tell today, and we're trying to tell cotton stories in the best possible way we can.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
If y'all think back to the expiration of the 08 bill.
Co-director of the Ag and Food Policy Center, Dr. Bart Fisher, on the 2023 Farm Bill.
If you remember hearing about the dairy cliff in the press, what ended up happening, I mean, the world doesn't fall apart on September 30th. Why? Mainly because we work in crop years on the farm policy side, right? You know, crop year being the year that you harvest. And so plant cotton in the spring, harvest in the fall, all the same. Wheat, you plant one year, harvest the next year. It's the year of harvest that's the crop year. And so September 30th can come and go because the farm bill's already authorized PLC for that crop year. And so what ends up happening, though, you get to the end of the year, you start to get to January 1, dairy could trigger every single, you know, could trigger every single day. And so that's why you heard about the dairy cliff on January 1. So typically, I mean, they can push it all the way to January without the world falling apart.